Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. This is the spot where we try and help you bring out the best version of yourself. And so we're pumped that you're with us. It's a rainy afternoon in Youngstown, which is why, Joe, this coffee is the best.
It makes you feel good inside,
it
does. Doesn't it?
It makes me feel wonderful. I feel energized right
nice.
Now. It's good. We want to talk about leadership, and I've been exploring a concept for my sermon this weekend, but I think it's applicable not just in a spiritual sense, but in a general sense, that really there is an alignment of different type of leaders to get a movement moving. And so the concept I'm going to tackle this weekend is this idea of prophet, priest, and king, but I'm going to bring it into a more generic context for our conversation. So in the concept this weekend, I'm going to share, when you look at Israel and you look at scripture, there's always a prophet, there's always a priesthood, and then there's always a king in their kind of alignment. And when the king gets out of line and tries to be the prophet or the priest, things go wrong. The priest tries to do the role of the king, vice versa. Then, you know, the prophet steps in. Usually people die and stuff doesn't go well. People end up in captivity. But when the three are in alignment, there's prosperity, grounds taken, culture shifts, all of that. And so to define those three type of leaders, you have one that's very principled, that kind of are charting the course. They're very driven by justice, truth, like those things are the highest value. They don't really care what people think of them, but this is important because it's true and it's valuable. Then you have the second kind of leader is the person that's, hey, I want to bring people along. I care about the people. Everybody's wired a little bit differently, so let's take time and explain things. And their highest value is really, how do I help those people along? And then you have the folks that they're there to get stuff done. They're there to take ground. They're there to experiment and to push the boundaries and to provide the resources for the kingdom in that sense. And so I want to look at each of those facets. And I'm sure there's other nuances and players in this as we expand this a little bit. But I find today, when I look at Facebook, when I look at our country, our culture, culture is being shifted by a voice that says, hey, this is the truth, this is where we're going. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a truth I agree with, you know, you have the what people would call the social justice warriors, the PCers, the folks that are just driving a narrative in our culture, and they don't seem to care what people think of it, they don't seem to care, but it's their truth, they're going to drive it home. And then you have everybody else that's kind of, most people are lumped into that middle group. They're kind of, I want to make sure everybody comes along, everybody gets along, that we enjoy one another, and we need those people to make sure that other people are okay. And then we have the doers over here. They're like, hey, you two do whatever you want, I'm gonna get some crap done. And I know which category you fall into.
For sure.
So so I kind of want to go into each of those categories because they each serve a purpose. And sometimes those folks that are just getting stuff done, when they come into alignment with a cause, with something bigger than themselves, it helps give a purpose to what they're doing. They're not just making money for the sake of making money, but I actually have a purpose that's right. Bigger than that. And so these three kind of work together. And I'm going to get into the spiritual side this Sunday. But for a practical sense, as we're talking with our audience, a lot of them are in business. And a lot of them, you know, are navigating that. Do you see yourself in that role of, hey, I'm getting crap done. I'm the king's here to make war, to lead the way, to take ground. I'm not here just to play nice in, you know, the kingdom. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, so in those roles, which is more frustrating for you, dealing with somebody who is very principled, but really just is very ethereal. Never does anything, just kind of puts it out there, the person who's trying to make sure everybody's okay? Or do you get frustrated at other people that are taking ground that you're not taking?
Oh, see, that's a good question. But, you know, I think in our culture, though, that there's so much of that, you know, mishmash between those two things, right?
Yeah.
Or those three things. So there's a lot. There isn't, like, divided where you have those three segmented things out. So I would say, you know, I really go tone deaf to a lot of what other people are doing. Yeah. And doers just kind of like do their own thing, ignore the white noise and get stuff done. So I kind of take it in stride.
Yeah. I think the hard part in all of this is when you have one piece but not the other three pieces, not the other two pieces, when someone's just worried about the people but they really don't have any purpose, they're just gathering, you know, people to themselves, everybody, and there's no, they're not accomplishing anything. That frustrates me. When I have somebody that's just got a megaphone and they just want to shout at the top of their lungs their version of truth, but they're not willing to do anything about it, that's frustrating to me. And when you have people out there, look, you know, hey, I'm doing this, I don't care about the others. Like, I'm like, there's so much more value and purpose you could bring to the table. And so those three worlds all have to align, I believe, to get anything significant done. Doers can do, but only to a certain point. They need to find a cause that gets them up in the morning, something that really drives them. I'm not saying they necessarily need another person, if that makes sense. But if they don't find that cause within themselves, they come, you know, how many times have we heard people having crazy success, making a ton of money, and they come to the end of it and they're like, well, you know, this wasn't worth it. They go bankrupt. They end up getting into drugs or committing suicide because they had no purpose.
Right. So now these three very like alpha type of leadership roles, and you, if they get in alignment, what natural thing aligns them? Because alphas don't get aligned by external forces very often.
Yeah. So, when you look at it, there has to be an overarching, you see this in politics, right? So there's a philosophy that binds them all together. So you have the person with the megaphone, the politician or whatever out there pleading the cause. Doesn't have to do anything with it. You know, it's just going to go, I'm going to vote for these bills, but here's the cause. Here's my platform. And then you have the gatherers, the people underneath him that are pulling people into these things, gaining support behind the cause. And then obviously you have the people that have made the money and are able to push, you know, we were talking about the mayoral race here in Youngstown. They're getting ready to have a debate or whatever. And I think I asked one of the guys last week, like, well, how much money do you have to raise to win a mayoral race here in a city like this? And they said, like $120,000 to $150,000. If you don't have some people that can push that kind of, you can have the greatest messaging in the world, but ain't nobody going to hear it. Exactly. And so that's one example. But you could look at this even in terms of one of the things that I say about church. A lot of churches are the best kept secret in their community. Because they may have a great message, they may have a really great pastor, they may have some great programs, but nobody knows about it. They don't have the money to put themselves out there, they don't have the wherewithal, and we've downgraded that other, we've elevated the message and the cause so high that we forget, hey, without these people over here, that doesn't go to anybody.
That's right.
Like, you're just playing patty cake and kumbaya with your 10 people, and that may be great, but at the end of the day, if we're really in the mission of changing culture and shifting a world, you know, you got to be a part. So that alignment allows big messages to go far, even bad big messages. I mean, think of some of the organizations that are out there. You're like, that message is dumb. It's antithetical. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to pick on anybody. But there are just some organizations, not even that I don't agree with them, just like it's hypocritical or it's like totally a logical fallacy. But they put it out there. They brand it. They get all this money behind it. And they get people gathered together. And all of a sudden, they're a force to be reckoned with. And they're driving political agendas and all kinds of shifts because they have these three things in alignment. And so when you have a cause and you have somebody that can gather people and then you have the funding behind it, it's over. I mean, that really pushes things forward. I mean, think about even what you're trying to do here at Youngstown Studio, right? So you started something, you're, hey, I'm a doer. Let's do this. We're going to make an investment. We're going to get a studio space. I'm going to hunt these folks down. We got to gather an audience, and that takes finance. But it's got to get behind a message. Well, what sort of message? Well, we believe in local talent. We believe, you know, you have a heartbeat behind that. And the people that are drawn to that are the ones that come by and start, here, right, here you go. Let's get the message out. And so I think in the grand, you know, scheme of things, most people find themselves in one of those three camps, and they're frustrated because either they're fairly successful, but they don't have anything significant to do with their success, or they have a message they really are burdened to get out, but they don't know how to get the money to put it out there. They don't know how to gather the people. And those three things are so vital. I don't care if you're a church, a PTA, a business, it doesn't matter. You need all three components. So how for you, how does Joe navigate this being a doer, right? Do you find messaging that you love and then get behind in terms of finance, business, et cetera? How do you gather people to your cause, if that makes sense? Because I know the knee jerk for you is like, hey, let's go do it. Let's start a business. Let's figure this out.
Right.
And we'll meet a need. But I also know that you're driven hardcore by like, this is going to be significant. We're going to change the world. It has to be purposeful. So do you go hunting for those? Do they come to you? How do you pick which purposes you get behind? Because there's a lot of people saying, hey.
Yeah, well, this topic is amazing because I've never put it through this filter before. So it's amazing. Like, I'm still kind of disseminating it. And now when I'm like putting it through that filter, I'm thinking a lot of this happens by accident. I mean, it's not intentional, but a lot of, you know, when you get a pusher and you're pushing on some big things, you create, you know, like a wake behind you, but you also have like peace behind you. So a lot of people are coming to, after things are mowed down, they're like, oh, this is kind of nice back here. So I think it's you attract people to you because you're willing to take on things that maybe other people won't.
Yeah. Well, I know for myself, I tend to fall into the category of I have a cause that I believe in, and I'm going to tell everybody about that. And I'm not bad at the gathering side of things. But one of the conversations you and I've had is we need some pushers. We need some, it's great that you have a good message, but I remember one of the first conversations we had, how come you're not Facebook Living? How come you're not on in terms of church stuff? And I was like, well, I got my phone and it was really crappy. And you were like, hey, I'm a doer. Let me come alongside and help with that space for the church. And so,
well, I watched a lot of guys before me that they had the great intentions and they have good financial backing, and everybody said that they supported. But every time I saw them, they were really alone. Like they were pushing, but everybody's waiting to say, "Let me know when it gets easy. I'll be right over." You know, and so they ran out of steam. They ran out of momentum. They ran out of support. They ran out of money. And before the really whatever they had was going to get done, they couldn't hang out there long enough. So fortunately, you know, I think I lucked into a lot of the support where there, you know, a lot of momentum's being like delivered to me through some kind of, you know, divine whatever.
Sure.
And I'm the benefit. But like I said, that's by accident. I didn't plan for that to happen.
Yeah. And I'm not sure you can plan for. I think some of it is just being aware of what you need. Like knowing, hey, like I'm a cause-driven person. Like what gets me up in the morning is seeing the things that I've been called to do push forward. And then for other people, when they get up in the morning, the thing that drives them is, hey, you know, I have some companies I have to deal with. I have employees that I employ, like that wakes me up in the morning and drives me that we're meeting needs and we're creating things. And then other people are getting up going, hey, I want to help gather some people to some really significant and exciting causes. And so, you know, if you don't, it doesn't work without one or the other. And so, if you can gather people to your causes, but you don't have any money to take it anywhere, you're not going to accomplish anything. Right. I often say to the church, you know, the great, frustration a lot of folks have is like, well, how do we feed hungry people? Money. And the church is terrified to talk about stuff like that. Well, how are we going to clothe naked people? Money. like how are we going to take care of housing needs? How are we going to do some of this, meet some of the needs in our community? It's going to take finance. Like, you know, we've been set up and we've been doing some amazing stuff with addicts, but I can tell you right now, if we didn't have somebody step up and say, hey, I have an extra $10,000, here you go for a bus. That would continue to be very difficult. We were having 11, 12 cars. Your car was one of them to pick up, you know, some of these folks and bring them, to church for us to be able to minister to them. Now we have a bus that can go and scoop them up, but it took somebody over here. It's great that we had a cause and a man that this is going to be so great. It's great that people were like, ooh, it's awesome. But until you get some people to come alongside and say, all right, here you go, go make it happen. I get frustrated too with the cause-driven people that never want to do anything. They want to talk about it. They like to post about it on Facebook. They like to tweet about it. They like to, you know, like to come in church and sing about it and hear the preacher talk about it. But they, God forbid, they get off their behinds and do something. That to me is a huge frustration, and we have that a big undercurrent of that in our culture. Is we have a lot of people that are driven by, you know, oh, I believe in this cause, and a lot of it's posturing. You know, they want to be able to get some clicks on their Instagram or whatever. But ultimately, if that cause doesn't come to fruition, it's not anybody's fault but your own. We talked about this Tuesday. Like, you are the obstacle to the thing that that you want to achieve. Are there any causes in Joe's world where he's like, I want to be a trumpet for that or a champion for that?
See, I told you, like, when I used to watch TV shows and movies, I went in deep with that, you know, hero that to a fault would die for what he believed in. And it was always those same noble, those virtues that over, you know, protect the weak and innocent and do the right thing, even if there's, there's conflict because of it. I mean, all of those things, I said, yeah, I like that part. I want to be that. I want to be the hero on the screen. So that's who I became.
Yeah. So, I know you support a couple organizations and we've talked about these probably a year ago now, which is wild. Mm-hmm. But for some of our audience that's newer, what are some of those causes, those organizations that just drive your heart, that you and Deb love and support and, support financially, support with your presence, support with business stuff? What are a couple of those?
All right, so one is Project MKC. This place, mm-hmm. my wife's a teacher, and this we got introduced to them. They came into a school, and all they wanted to do was help all of the kids, underprivileged, people without supplies. And I watched this group kind of grow over the years to, you know, take care of kids. And kids are like that soft spot, you know, they're innocent. They don't deserve if they mm-hmm. get a rare, bad hand. And so for just to see this group come in there and rescue kids, I'm like, they're my heroes when it comes to that. Yeah, that's everything I want to be. And they're able to do it on a much bigger scale than we are. So if we drill money into them, I mean, it just gets magnified. And that's really the goal here. A couple of the, you know, like American Red Cross is always a good one. There's the Alzheimer's group, same thing. Whenever you have like a loved one that falls victim to something and you watch them go through something devastation, if there's any group out there that can take care of those types of people, I mean, it warms your heart a little bit, you know?
No, absolutely. I know one of the conversations you and I've had for me being a leader of the church, a nonprofit, I've often said to you, like, show me how to do this in a way. I guess I'll ask it this way. What is a way someone's watching this, they're starting a nonprofit or they work for the Animal Humane Society or whatever. They're in a space or they have a, or they're a part of an organization or they have one that they really, how do you want to be approached as someone who is looking for a cause, who has worked really hard, who has finances to invest? How do you want to be approached? What are you looking to hear? What do you want the leaders to do? Cause this has been my experience, sure. Right? So as pastor, I get invited to a lot of rubber chicken dinners and they come in, they tell you, well, we did this and we did this, and they give you the stats and, and some are great organizations that like, hey, the church already supports you. We're going to support you anyway. You don't have to sell me on this. But a lot of times they bring you in for like these fundraising dinners and it's, you know, you do several in a row and you hear the very similar stories. And what's going to make somebody stand out and why, what's going to draw? You say to me all the time, there's people sitting on the sidelines with cash looking to invest in something that inspires them. So how does someone tap into that? You know, they have a cause, but they don't know how to tap into.
So every group that I support bigger than any other group lets me be involved in the way of my choosing. Mm. So like the American Red Cross, they said, Joe, you do all this media stuff and whatever. We'd like you to help us with our media. You know, we want to drill in what you're good at. We see you're out there. It's some acknowledgement and wow. Say, hey, can you come help us? Project MKC, it's the same thing. They let me be involved. And it's not like they throw me on the board that, you know, makes me work 80 hours a week and whatever, because that'll never in a million years happen. Yeah. But I get to walk in the office and say, hey, is there anything that I can help with? I've got 2 minutes of time. I mean, is there anything I can do to help you? And they fill what I have and don't expect more than I have. And it's sort of like that delicateness where they don't overextend. They don't ask and beg and whatever, they let me walk through the door and do it on my own terms.
It's good. Involvement's good. It creates ownership. And I think most of the folks over here that are the doers, they're the business people, they're leading organizations, they're involved, they have finance, they've been very diligent in their own world. When it comes to a cause, they're not just looking necessarily to write a check, but they're looking to invest their heart.
That's it.
And I think that's the other side of it. As we get to people's hearts, and reminds me of a scripture. The Bible says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. And I think at the end of the day, people, you know, support financially, support with their time, support with their energy, those things that have either made a huge investment in their heart or pulled on their heartstrings in such a way that they look at that and go, wow, you know, that's
inspiring. So once you get me involved and I can see around and I'm just around enough, I will notice things that say, oh, that calls out to me where I should be involved in that.
Yeah, so
and then
good.
It brings me in. If you make a sales pitch, you probably already lost.
Oh, that's so good. And just thinking to the church, I think you showed up at the church. I think a month and a half later, we had lunch at BJ's, talked a little bit. And I think it was at that lunch you asked me about why we didn't broadcast the service or whatever. And I was like, well, you know, I tried twice on my phone. It was terrible. And you were like, can I have a shot? I'm like, sure. And then the next week you showed up with cameras and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
Wow. Okay. He was coming in here and you know, today we have all the, you know, wireless stuff and all the cameras and stuff like that.
And if someone asked you how that happened, you would say lightning struck. You couldn't have planned that.
No.
That came up because you were open. I was open.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were both polite and kind to one another and we let what was supposed to happen happen.
Yeah. That's cool. And I think the same thing's true with the bus and with the, you know, with other stuff that I look at. It's just creating the opportunities for lightning to strike, if you can,
yeah,
that makes
for
sense.
Sure.
It's not necessarily making the lightning strike, but it's creating the opportunity. And the more available and easier you can make it for lightning to strike, it'll happen more and more and more.
And what happens a lot of times is that when we're in that deal where I'm trying to help you, like you're trying to outdo me and help me right back. And then, so I feel like I need to help you some more. And then we can't figure out who's the helper and who's the receiver. Then you got it tight. Then you have a really good professional relationship.
Yeah, that's so true. I find, and I'm going to use some Bible words here, but I'll define them. I find that in those relationships between those three types of leaders, it's always better when it's a covenant relationship versus a contractual relationship. So for instance, I feel like you and I, it's not like, hey, Joe, I'll do this for you if you do that for me. That's very contractual.
Exactly.
A lot of marriages fail because they go into a contract. Well, you know, if she would just treat me this way, then I would treat her that way. It's not the way marriage works. I use the word covenant because covenant says I'm for Joe 100-0. If Joe never gives me anything, I'm in. And Joe in turn is saying, well, whether Doug gives me anything or not, I'm in 100-0. I buy into the person. And the same way in my marriage, you know, I say to my wife, like, it's 100-0. That's why we say, like, in sickness and in health, even if she gets really, really sick and she can't provide anything for me, I'm still in 100-0. And so it's none of this 50-50 garbage. And I think those type of relationships, when you find those type of people that are just like, hey, I'm in for you, whether I get anything out of the deal, like, I'm all in, you know, Joe wants to do Youngstown studio. Yeah, I'm all in. Like, I love Joe and I love what he's doing. So I'm in. And Joe comes to me tomorrow and says, hey, I got this idea. You know, we were talking about the business lunch at church and I'm like, hey, I'm all in. Let's figure this out. And so to me, those are the exciting things that happen. And I could go down a list of folks that have come into my world or at the church where it's like, hey, like, whether you just sit here and take in the service or you have something exciting you want to do, like I'm for you. And
well, let me interrupt this here real quick, because number one question I get when we talk about stuff like this is the, you have to give to get, right?
Yeah.
Cause the first thing people want to know is, well, how much do I have to give to get?
Right.
Have to give to get, right? You're wrong already. Right?
Exactly.
If the question comes to your head, then it's transactional. Yeah, it's 100% contrived, right? So you have to be willing to give without the expectation to get. Now, we're just pointing out that if you do that without the strings, what the intention is, or not the intention, but the consequence is that you end up receiving and then you have to give again.
You reap what you sow. It's a Bible verse.
Yeah. Let's give the number because these people might
wanna... if you would like to get something, all you have to do is
ruined it.
Is give the phone number and you dial it in. You could call in 330-595-1600 and win Joe's AirPod Pros and what was it, $400 or $500?
$400 this week.
$400 in there this week. So, and if you want to be a part of the show and talk about a little bit of this stuff, maybe you find yourself on the side of feeling like people are always trying to take from you, you want to learn how to be more generous, live more open-handed. I think one of the best illustrations, and I'm going to use this coming up on a Sunday, I watched this pastor do this, and it was really great. So he said, oh, you know what? I don't carry any cash on me. In the middle of his message, he goes, anybody have any cash on them? And one of the guys comes running up with a $100 bill. And he goes, wow, $100, that's really nice. And he makes a quip about it. And then he says, oh, to the guy, he goes, you know, was that hard to give it to me? It was $100. I mean, are you going to miss that? And, you know, everybody's like, you know, wow, that's $100. That's really generous of that guy, you know, to just give the pastor $100. And he said, the reason it wasn't hard for him to give it to me, because it wasn't his. I gave it to him before the service so that he'd give it to me. It was mine. And he goes, but when we go around our lives pretending everything is ours and we hold it with a closed hand, it's very difficult to release it. But when we recognize that everything we've been given is a blessing from God, it makes it easier just to give and let it flow through us. It was a really great illustration. I was like, I'm stealing
that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Brian from Brian says, glad to see you guys succeeding through the pandemic. Brian from the third floor of the
Commerce Building.
Commerce Building.
Hi, Brian.
Brian, thank you. Welcome to the program.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that have figured out a way to thrive through the pandemic, and it is possible. And, and thank you for checking in. Appreciate it.
No, yeah, that's so true. I think, and you know this, it's true regardless of situation, circumstance, who's at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, who's in the Supreme Court, like all of that stuff is secondary to what you can do. I'm not in control of any of that, but I am in control of me in that sense. And so you're in control of you. You should call in right now. I'm really bad at the radio thing, aren't I? And we'll punch in your number here in this trusty little red box we got going on with the goodies inside. So
if you want to try a code, I will allow you one time as the host to try a code, and if you're right, nobody will believe that I didn't just give you the code.
But, yeah, it's true.
But go for it.
All right, let's see. What should I do? What would Joe do? WWJD.
I got a bracelet for it.
All right, we're going to do my birthday. Incorrect. We got sound effects. That was so bad. That's awesome. Now we have a couple of guests coming up, and I think one of the cool things about the podcast, I'm going to spin this back into the three different types of people. When we bring in somebody like Dr. Mike, who was on with us a couple weeks ago, and he's going to come back. I have a rabbi friend from Israel that's going to come in. You've had some business people come in from the Chamber of Commerce and other places. I think the power in that is we're helping to align people that maybe they don't have the cause, maybe they don't have the funds, maybe they don't have the people, but we can bring them in and we can go, you know who we should connect you with after the show? You should be connected with so-and-so. It's one of my favorite things to do at church. Somebody comes through the door. You have two guys right now that were like, I kind of don't like my job, where I'm at, da, 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 da. And I was like, Frank's hiring 18 people right now. I'm like, connect with him, you know, pointing them to him. They may never take a job there. It may not be what they're looking for. That's okay. But man, I love being that resource. And it's one of the things that we're going to try and do with some of our business people at the church is just, hey, let's connect resources. Like, all right, you need somebody to do that. Well, this person, that's what they do for a living. Let's connect some B2B and some employees and other stuff. But to me, that's the fun part is, man, I have this person over here who's got, you know, this cause, but then I got this person over here who's got this resource, and I got this person over here as people. Man, if we can get them aligned, that it'll take off for all of them. And I think that's one of the things that you so enjoy about investing in businesses and pulling people in is like, well, you know, you got this part and this part, but I can add this component. Let me help you do that. I know you're doing it. You had Travis on, was it Pratt's Vision Construction?
Yeah.
And, contracting, that's what it is. Yeah. And you and him have joined this joint business venture. And so here's a guy with a skill set. passion to do it. He's pretty good. He did some work in my house. He's pretty good at it. And you're coming alongside going, hey, let's think a little bit bigger. I'm willing to come alongside and make a financial investment and to help this go forward. And he's like, well, I'm willing. And you're going to start aligning things. People are going to get hired and it's going to be such a healthy thing. Are you looking to do that a few more times? I know we're doing it once here with this, but talk a little bit about that partnership and what else you're looking to do.
I mean, it's amazing. Like, people have been coming along and asking me, or saying that they need something that I know how to do. And it's been amazing. Like, oh, that's amazing. Let's fix that part of it. And so, you know, go on the radio, talk about what we're doing with businesses. And my phone rings like crazy that some people are stuck in the exact spot that I said that most people are stuck in, because everybody is stuck there. This isn't like a, you know, it's human nature to get stuck the way that we are. But yeah, we're going to work with a ton of, especially small businesses that are hit. You know, when I started Youngstown Computer, I was a single operator. I was working my ass off. I couldn't break away from actually doing any business to hire somebody.
Yeah.
So I would desperation hire a bunch of people, and I hired a whole lot of the wrong people, and I injured myself a whole lot. But I was stuck. Like, what do? You work less and you know, lose customers because you can't do the job and do it the right way. And you're going to have to lose somewhere, but I chose the wrong losings all the time because I didn't have me sit there and say, don't do the stupid thing, do the smart thing, even if it's harder.
Yeah. Well, and the fun part about, mentors and coming into somebody who's been in business for 20 years and has learned some of those battles the hard way, you can say, hey, look at this scar. Let me tell you.
You don't have to do that one.
When this happened, this is why it happened. It's why I love some of the pastoral mentors in my life and stuff like that. They've been so gracious to say, like, hey, like, I hope that my ceiling is your floor. You don't ever have to learn these the hard way. The first time I had to make a hire, the first time we had to make a staff change, first time we had to do those sort of things, I got to make those calls and say, hey, you've done this before. How do I do this and do it well? How do I do it, so that the church succeeds and it doesn't become, how do I navigate this? And they were able to say, like, hey, let me tell you, I did it. Good, bad, horrible. Let me tell you these three stories. And I went, okay, not going to do that. Not going to do that. Definitely going to try and do that. And that's the power of, partners and mentors and stuff like that is, you get to have some things that you wouldn't otherwise have. And that's why I think those three kind of components are so
important. Can I complain real quick?
Yeah.
This is Joe's complaining corner. Okay. So when I was getting started, I would always pay attention to who people listen to, who people, who they grant authority to be believable. And the most the weird one to me was that a parent will tell a kid to do something, right? They're like, oh, yeah. But somebody that's not their parent will tell them to do something, and they're like, oh, genius. And the parent's got to be like, what the hell? I've been telling you that for years, and it comes to your teacher, and you're now all of a sudden you're brushing your teeth. What the hell?
Yeah. Right? Well, I want to tell you, as someone who speaks for a living, I say a lot of things from the platform, and I will say some of the exact same things, and then I'll bring in a guest speaker a year later, and I've been drilling something, and the guest speaker will come in, everybody's like, he's so funny, she's so funny, she said this, he said that, and I'm like, I've been saying that, you punks, for like 6 months, saying the same thing over and over, and they come in one time, and they said it a little different, or they said it a little louder, or they said it funnier, and then all of a sudden, it's like a light bulb goes on, and I'm like, why do I even do this?
But here's what I figured out, I wanted to know why, and here's another story, like my father in law was guilty of this. I was a computer tech guy, right? And so, like, I was helping him with his computer at home, but a guy at the mill, said this. And the guy at the mill, stock value is way higher than the guy that actually knew how to get the. It drove me crazy. So here's the deal. Yeah. I am now finally in my career where I'm in the position that when I say it, that I hold the authority. I'm thinking, where did I get that from? Where did it come from? Here's the thing. People are hungry when they get to me because I don't share it until I grant you with the time to share it with you. So when we're not around, I don't feed you, right? So you have to develop the hunger for what I have to say because you don't have me around. That's the good. Parent, all around all the time.
Yep.
The son-in-law, around all the time. The preacher, always around all the time. But you have a little distance. People get a little bit thirstier for what you have to say, and they listen to you more intently.
There's a term that we use sometimes in church circles, familiarity breeds contempt. When you have access to it, you don't appreciate
it. Exactly.
And then when you don't, it's why, the the Bible says Jesus went to his hometown and he wasn't able to do a lot of miracles there. Cause they said, isn't that the carpenter's son?
Yeah. Right. You know,
there was a familiarity to it. Like we knew him, but then you go to other places and the Bible says he healed everybody. And it's like, well, he went to his hometown. He certainly could have,
sure.
You know, but they were like, yeah, he built a set of bookshelves for my cousin and it was horrible. You know, right. But it was just a different element when you're in that space. So yeah, it's very true. I can remember my parents telling me something and then my coach would say it and I come and be like, oh, coach said, what do you mean coach said? but that's the power of those partnerships too. When you get around different perspectives, it shifts things. And I mean, you're in my relationship has shifted my perspective on some things. And I know you say that it's been reciprocal in that sense. How do you navigate? So you obviously had some people that poured in. You obviously are pouring into others right now. And I would say too, you're, I don't know how familiar you are with John Maxwell and his leadership stuff. He just guru writes a ton of leadership books. But in Developing the Leader Within You, he talks about the five tiers of leadership. And the first one is your title. So you owned a computer company, therefore Joe has a little bit of credibility. But then the next one is relational. Well, Joe's built a relationship. I know Joe. He's worked on my computer before. And, you know, he was solid on that. So I can kind of trust him. I have a relationship with him. Then the next tier is, I'm going to use the wrong word, but it's, you know, basically, you know, he's done some stuff. He's had some progress and he's had some success. There's some things that have pushed on. And then there's a fourth tier and a fifth tier. People most of the time,
you just know, right about yeah, the third
about
one,
the
maybe.
Third one. You know, the fifth one, I think, is a legacy. Like, you know, you've had so much credibility and so much success over the years. It doesn't matter what you talk about. It's why Shaq can sell us pizza. You know, he had a ton of success as a basketball player. But by the time, you know, and now as an announcer and now as an investor and a business person, he's had success in all these spheres. Right. So people go, oh, well, whatever he says is probably gold. Even though he may have no idea what he's talking about, it doesn't matter. He has that credibility because he's had success on
I love
on
my
levels.
George Foreman girl, though. You can't talk me out of it.
Yeah, George Foreman, I tell you, for being a boxer and then the way he's branded himself and life after boxing, so to speak, I mean, a smart business guy, but you know, he has, I don't know, like 11 kids or something like that. And you know, yeah. They're all named George.
Are they really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Somebody liked himself. Just saying.
A lot.
So, but those partnerships are key. You're saying a lot of them come, you know, not naturally. What are some of the key partnerships for you that you've had over your business career? One or two people that you look at and go, man, they came into my life and this helped shift this whole arena for me.
I swear to you, I lucked into 99% of them. So I can't lay claim to any of them. The family thing, I'll always give credit to. I mean, if I didn't have that, I mean, if me being able to walk into anything and knowing that it could go bust and nobody cared, nobody was holding me at the board meeting, no one's yelling at me, whatever. Yeah. I felt so much confidence in everything else I did. That's the only gift that I've really been given from other people is that they believed in me.
Yeah.
My son, my wife, I didn't need anybody else believing in me.
That's good.
That feels very cheesy and warm, but it is,
but it's true. And I, you know, the same thing with, you know, my wife and I talk about that all the time when I'm going to make a big move or a big vision cast at the church. And I'm like, well, so if this goes south, you still got me, right? You know, if everybody leaves and we have to close the doors, you still love me, right? And it makes it easier when you're like, hey, you know, I think you said before, you know, hey, even if we end up in a cardboard box, we'll be together.
I think about that almost every week.
Yeah.
Knowing where you don't have to guarantee the results leaves you open to literally anything.
Yeah, it gives great motivation and lets you take that swing. It's one of the things that I've said to you early on is that, you know, I want to generate enough income outside the church that I can literally make that my act of service, that I don't have to take a salary at the church. And but the thought process in that too is like you lead differently. Like when your salary is attached to something, you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't. I don't want to rock the boat too much because, you know, I don't want to, you know, what if we don't make it here? What if that doesn't happen? But when you pull that piece out of the equation, well, then let's
go free to do whatever.
Let's go.
You were here because you wanted to be.
Exactly. And it changes things in that sense. And so you try and lead from that place, but it's tough when there's the monetary side of things. I think Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, he has this quote that he says something along the lines that they give you a salary to make you a slave. It's very contrary. People commented a whole bunch of stuff on there. But his point wasn't that getting a salary and having a good job and coming home and taking care of your family is not a noble thing to do or not good. But he's saying at the end of the day, you're not free to do whatever you want to do. And he was talking in the context of financial freedom. And he said, so you can take that salary, but you're going to be a slave to it. You're going to have to go to work at 9. You're going to have to check out. You're going to have a boss that checks in on you. But when you get to that freedom spot where I work for myself, that's a whole different animal. You can go on Gus the Bus whenever you want. Like
ever I want.
Exactly. I mean, those sort of things free you to step into, you know what? I do want to burn stuff with a 3D engraver or whatever. And
you
can
walk into the strangest stuff around me, don't you?
I came in and I was like,
wood's burning. What is that? And I'm lighting stuff on fire with a laser. Yeah. That's what I do. Let me tell you about this. This is a new thing. Deb and I, we agreed that we're going to go on the Memorial. I think whatever's that May, the end of May. Is that Memorial Day? Yeah, Memorial Day. The next trip that we're going to make down to Florida. Of course, we're going to go to Florida. But she's going to go back through my Facebook post from all the way back to 2007. Mm-hmm. And she's going to compile all of like my best Facebook posts and write an entire book about it. We're going to spend 16 hours down and 16 hours back assembling the Mega Joe Facebook post. This is going to be amazing.
That's sweet. Somebody did that with their blog post. I don't know if you're familiar with John Acuff. He had a blog called Stuff Christians Like, and he basically just made fun of Christians. It was really funny. Eventually his blog was super popular. He just compiled it into a book and he sells it all.
And if you've not followed me, I mean, it's crazy. Sometimes it's inspiring. Other times we categorized, and I think we had like 14 different categories of madness. So this is going to be good.
Now, are you going to, publish or, was this just for a keepsake for Joe?
Oh, it's going to publish. Yeah. Okay. We're going to awesome. Publish this sucker.
Yeah.
Bestseller.
Yeah. Cause I know there's three different, layers to that. Like you can publish and with like a publisher and a publicist and all that sort of stuff. And there's a certain, you know, level of that cost. You can self publish and pump it out there yourself and get it on Amazon, whatever yourself. Or some people just, you know, hey, I'm going to buy 50 copies for my family.
Well, and stuff like that. I've been threatening to do a book for the last 10 years now. And so I bought the ISBN and I did all the stuff. Wow. I'm ready to go. Just that my template has no words in it and a blank book doesn't sell real well.
Well, there's a kid's book that my kids have and it's called The Book with No Words.
Oh, somebody printed a blank book.
And it makes a ton of money.
Oh, you shitting me. What is going on in this world? I'm telling you,
the kids stuff, bro, on YouTube and the kids books. I'm like, I missed my calling. like the cat is tired. The cat is very tired. You know, like, and it's like these books I'm reading them. I'm like, I can do this.
I'm not mocking you children's book, but that is something where that, yeah, never mind. I'm not going to mock children's books.
I mean, we could talk about Dr. Seuss, but we'd probably stir up a whole sort of...
Oh, we get kicked offline.
We'd get kicked offline. Sorry, YouTube. Oh, that's awesome. But yeah, I'm excited to unpack this in a spiritual sense and what it means for the church on Sunday. But I do think practically you have to have a cause, you have to have people gathered to it, and you have to have funding behind it. Those three things are, you know, you can have all the funds you want, but if you don't have something exciting to put it into, it's no good. If all you have is a cause and you don't have any funding, if all you have is a group of people and you don't have, you know, you have to have those components together. And, you know, it's why those guys go on Shark Tank all the time, right? Or any of that sort of stuff. And so they go on because, well, I need funds for this. You know, I have a good idea, you know, and some of them, they don't give them anything because they're like, well, you're an inventor. This is a good invention, but you really haven't proved your concept. You don't have any people for me to sow any money into. And those are their two objections. Like, oh, it's a great cause, but really don't have any people. Or you got a bunch of people, but I think this is going to fizzle out because I really don't think it has a great cause. And so it's very, or you've been really bad on the money and you've had other people give you money. And I don't want to be one of six investors. I want to be the only one. And so it's just a fascinating lens.
After your sermon, this is what I really want to get at. And so don't answer this question. I want to ponder this for months after you do this. Just give me the details and then I'm going to make this up. But I really want to know the features of alignment, where it's aligned in the past, where, you know, like I've seen great civilizations being built by kingdoms that align these three forces. Yep. And I want to know, like, you always watch the king and they have this great advisor that gives them direction. And in the movie, you're like, the king's just going to kill the advisor. Yeah, he's going to tell him what to do. He's going to totally kill them. And he does, and he's like, why didn't he kill him?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But he kills everybody else. But anyway, but there's got to be some kind of magnetism that aligns these things in certain circumstances. And I want to evaluate ones historically, how many times this happened and what conditions were there. And was it, you know, a religious thing? Was it a economic thing? Or it's more all of the above.
Well, I mean, when you look at those ancient civilizations, you always have a religious component to successful, you know, kingdoms. You had a overarching philosophy that ruled the country from a moral sense. You always had a governing sense that was balanced enough between king and people. And then you always had a you know, a national pride, military sense, cause, or whatever that they were going to do. It's what made the Roman Empire so successful. Like, you know, but once they conquered so much, they were kind of like, they got lazy, they turned internal, they lost their moral compass, they lost that, like, you know, then they got taken over by the Caesars and lost the Senate and lost all the stuff that made them awesome. And then you turn into despotism and everything else. It's very sad if we start looking at, you know, kind of the arch of civilization. You consider where America might be at in that arch is interesting. So,
yeah. Guess what I did this morning? This is kind of cool. You should try this sometime. So I was looking at sort of the Revolutionary War, I wanted to look at it from the perspective of the British, like not like the formal stuff, not the stuff that went through government, but I wanted to see like what they were saying in, you know, not the colonial, but, you know, the British version of the colonial, what the people were saying. And I wanted to see if it, you know, from that perspective, like who was the villain, like what was really going on. And if I were over there, whose side would I really be on? Would I have been like, hey, you know what? We really dogged out those Americans. Mm-hmm. We're going to get what we deserved. Or would I be like, those Americans, snuff them out, you know? But it's kind of cool. So I think I'm going to pick some more sort of like historical dates and try to like get the other side, you know what I mean, from that perspective, because it was eye-opening.
So this fall, are you taking Gus the Bus up the East Coast?
I don't know. I may. Why?
You should, with the foliage. And the foliage. No, but Boston, Philly, like those sort of areas to hit up that sort of Revolutionary War history is a ton of fun and just beautiful. I've never been to Boston, but I've been to Philly a ton. But tackling that, and it's on this side of history, we're like, well, of course we'd pick the winning side. Like everyone says that. But you go back and, you know, it's like everybody acts, you know, so dogmatic, like, oh, I would have never kept a slave. And I'm like, really? Like, how many people did that, you know, in the 1600s and the 1500s? Like, I know you say it now, but you're looking through a lens of 400 or 500 years of history.
Right.
And so it's easy to say, like, oh, those people were terrible. But in the midst of it, you know, that was totally normal. It was socially acceptable. It was built into their moral compass and code. And, you know, we can look back, hindsight, and make certain judgments.
And there's something today that existed in the future. Exactly. They're going to be saying they were so incivil.
Exactly. So true. What is
incivil a word even?
I don't know. I make words up all the time.
Like, incivil.
Yeah,
incivil. It's a word. It's a Joeism.
Yeah. Webster's will add it. They're adding all kinds of weird stuff into the dictionary. It's awesome. Well, it's about that time. We'll see you back here on Tuesday for some more of our ramblings and thoughts on life and leadership, and hopefully helping you take some steps to the next level.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.